Alright, it's been a hot minute, everyone. We're back with another episode of the Snakes on the Diamond podcast. Wes and I are going to talk about the Diamondbacks' recent stretch of good play, including a massive series win over the Dodgers, and some of the Diamondbacks' top prospects who have gotten off to a good start in 2024. We're going to talk about if it's an actual legit breakout or encouraging season, or if there are some factors that we need to temper our expectations with. So we'll do all that on today's episode of the Snakes on the Diamond podcast. I think it's been about a month since the last time we were on here, Wes.
Let's be honest. We had a podcast that we recorded that we went like all over the place, and it was uneditable, and that's more on me than Michael. So that's why
we both had blunders in that one.
Yeah, but it's been even longer if you go the actual published episode. I'm honestly amazed that we have positives to talk about, because I checked out before these series, Michael. I expected the Diamondbacks to just suck balls, the massive balls, like just the worst possible outcomes for the month of May is what I expected. And they've kind of turned around the last 2 weeks. So let's talk about how they accomplished that.
The first player I think deserves a lot of credit is Brandon Pfaadt. He's on a quality start streak that goes all the way back to April 26th. He's thrown a quality start every start in May. And of course, what we define as a quality start is a pitcher that goes six innings and allows three earned runs or less. So even if they gave up some unearned runs, it would still count. Like, I know when Pfaadt started against San Diego, he gave up five runs, but only two of them were unearned, so it counts as a quality start. So that's kind of the first player that's kind of keyed this run, even though the Diamondbacks' record in those quality starts aren't necessarily great. I think they're 3-2. Yeah. But the fact that he's giving him a chance to win is the big thing.
And he's giving the bullpen a rest. Like, I mean, just being able to count on those innings consistently, and they're, you know, yeah, it amounts to like an over 4 ERA. If that's what you're saying earlier, close to 4 ERA. But like, I mean, that really, like, there are cascading effects. The Diamondbacks would be in a really bad position without Merrill Kelly and E-Rod, the continued absence of E-Rod. But I mean, that's a real asset there. Like, when you only need three innings, you know, or two innings to bridge the gap to a win, that's very helpful. I think you got to throw Kevin Newman. His hot streak has been unsustainable, but he's really been a hot bat the last two weeks.
Yeah, with Kevin Newman, obviously, you know, he's not going to sustain this thing. Like, he's not a 112 OPS plus hitter, probably not a 276 hitter, but you ride his hot streak is coming arguably not a better time. It's not that gives him someone that can play at shortstop every day.
Results are,
and his defense has actually been. Yeah, and he's had pretty good defensive results. Like, defensive run saves has him at +4, which is a really good thing to have in shortstop, especially when you weren't sure what you were going to get when you signed him off the street, basically. However, I also believe there's a lot of good qualities in his play, like his strikeout rate and walk rates right along his career norms. The exit velocity and the hard hit rate for Newman are career highs. Like, the exit velocity is 87. Well, wait, this is on Baseball Reference. Let's look it up on Stack on Baseball Savant. So, looking at Kevin Newman. Okay, so 30.8% hard hit rate and an average exit velocity ASM. So these numbers are correct. On Baseball Savant, those are career highs for Newman. So there's, but obviously, those are career highs for Newman, and it couldn't have come for a better time.
Yeah, Blaze Alexander, who was one of the few positives in the month of April, his bat significantly cooled off, which was like, you know, we talked about that. That's not unexpected. So yeah, Newman stepped up, and he's been a much more consistent defensive shortstop. So definitely a contribution to some more wins.
And a lot of his rallies have led to the Diamondbacks putting up runs on the scoreboard. He scored a lot of runs in that stretch. So we have it up somewhere. So okay, so we'll look up Newman again on Baseball Reference, but thinking is he's hitting like 400 in his last 15 games or so,
something like that. And the other real one that kind of stood out to me, like looking through the stats, is, like for the season, is Ketel Marte has turned, you know, gone from an all-star to like a superstar level season. I mean, he's on pace for like 9 WAR or something like that, 8-9 WAR, which is
nine WAR.
I think
is on pace. But think about it this way. If you're not a war guy, but you're wins above average, Ketel Marte is almost caught up to his 2023 total already. And this is May 24th?
Yeah.
Entering play May 24th?
He's turned it to 11. That's a real ass, especially with Corbin Carroll having some sophomore season problems. Like having Ketel pick up the slack in a lot of ways offensively really helps a lot. I mean, he had the oddest hitting streak I've ever seen of just the one hit. And it's like this. I think he might just be having fun out there with that one. It's very unusual to have a hitting streak like that. I think it's one of the longest in the last 50 years of, I think, like 16 game one hit hitting streak, where his batting average went down, but it doesn't feel like that. He's been on fire all year.
Yeah, it's a hitting streak where his numbers get worse. It's like 21 games, and he's hitting worse in his hitting streak than before. That's the irony of it.
Famously, Joe DiMaggio's batting average went down during his career. The league record for hitting 56 games. I think Gonzo's hitting streak went down too. And batting average, obviously, like there's a weird thing about those kind of batting average, you know, like streaks is, if you're just maintaining that hitting streak with one hit, okay, like yeah, there might be some, you know, hot periods where you get like 3-4 hits and they come in bunches, but for some players, like it's a weird phenomenon. It does not feel like the guy has been, you know, hitting continuously for a course like 2-3 weeks at a time, right?
I was gonna say, in Marte's case, there's a little bit, he's had a lot of hard hit balls find gloves.
Yeah, it's a weird hitting streak. That's really was my point with that. It's like, I mean, he feels like he's on fire. So I think that's like, you have a very much the, you know, the cause. I think it's more like he hasn't been lucky with getting a hit, but more unlucky not getting multiple hits. So I actually would expect Ketel Marte to heat up even more as the year progresses, hopefully.
I wouldn't be surprised he heats up if he has like an 0 for day and he goes hits like 300, 340 the next 2 weeks.
Yeah, you got to pick up the slack from, you know, the missing, you know, I definitely could see that happening. He's been the third most valuable offensive.
Third most valuable hitter?
Yeah, third most valuable hitter in the league. I mean, behind like, was it like Ohtani and
Betts?
Yeah, Mookie Betts. So, I mean, I think it's noticeable that, like, I mean, he's, you know, his contributions have been comparable to those two. You know, I think Christian Walker is another guy who's like kind of, he's been very steady. Like, I mean, you can see that his, you know, there hasn't been much of a drop off in terms of his play.
Yeah. And then you look at the Jock Peterson signing has been excellent for the D-backs as well. Yeah. Peterson's hitting 313 with a 965 OPS, and if we get into that OPS plus, it's 175. That has worked out great for them.
I think Jock Peterson has erased all the years that he played for the Dodgers and Giants so far, and like Diamondbacks fans, you know, hearts. Like, I'm totally okay with you now, Jock. Like, you're, well, as long as you don't go back to the Dodgers or Giants, I'm totally cool with you. Or yeah, Padres.
If you look at Yeah, because if you look at this Diamondbacks lineup currently, it's the biggest issue right now is, other than Corbin Carroll, is Suarez has been in a deep funk since the middle of April. Gurriel kind of went into a deep slump for 3 weeks, but he's coming out of it.
Yeah. Corbin Carroll has kind of shown life the last few games. I don't really feel he's been just as bad in May as he's been in April, but it does feel like he's kind of turning it around.
With Carroll, when he hits the ball, he really hits the ball.
It's the elephant in the room, honestly, in terms of like the problems with the team right now, other than, you know, the injured list. And that's the thing is that I would expect once, like we talked about before, once these guys come back from the injury list, it's basically like a mid-season acquisition. So we'll have Perdomo, I guess, should be back, like, you know,
end of May. Weeks is what I last heard. So I think maybe he gets in the rehab games in a week or so.
Maybe like June, probably. Then first week of June might be a realistic timeline.
Yeah, and I would agree so. And Alec Thomas, obviously, a little bit more concerned long-term because we're not sure when he's coming back. With Perdomo, you already know what the roster move is going to be in a week or so. Randall Grichuk has been as good as advertised, maybe a little less power than anticipated, but he's been a constant thorn in the side of every left-handed pitcher he's faced.
Yeah, the combination of output between Grichuk and Peterson, and as Grichuk in the outfield as well, but like, they're getting DH production. Like everyone who has been a DH this year for the Diamondbacks is, you know, done well in the role. Credit to both of them. I mean, they've been pretty much what we thought they'd be. Like you pointed out that Peterson was would be a great addition to the, you know, in the offseason. And you're right. So he's lived up to expectations. I think the real issue is going to be just the bullpen, honestly.
I mean, it depends on who pitches. I feel like if the Diamondbacks get a quality start from their pitching, they have the bullpen to close it out.
Yeah, I mean,
that's how I see. Like, if they only have to go 2-3 innings, I mean, the bullpen looks great because then you can just go Seawald, Mantiply. And I thought Ginkle actually looked pretty good his last time out, too. Now, obviously, it wasn't a high leverage situation, but the stuff looked, for the first time this year, actually looked normal.
I think really, my concern is just like not having like the starting pitching has been a real problem. Okay, I mean, it's really been hit hard by the injury list. You have Gallen, Bott. I'm trying to think. Like, I mean, you've gotten some decent production from Montgomery. If we don't get the additions, you know, like you don't get Erod back in the rotation, you don't get Merrill Kelly back in the rotation, it's going to be a very long year for the bullpen. That's really my concern is that the bullpen has looked very exposed with all the injuries.
I mean, if you look at the bullpen, I mean, who do you trust? I mean, we talked about a healthy Kevin Ginkle, Seawald, Thompson, Mantiply. I think you could add Justin Martinez to that list now. The walks are still a little bit high, but Martinez is starting to find the strikes and more regularity.
He is leaps and bounds better than when we first mentioned his name on this podcast. Like, I think I've said on record and on video that he cannot hit the broadside of a barn. And he's been hitting, you know, like the windows of a barn lately. And I really like what I'm seeing out of him. So, I mean, I definitely consider him an asset.
I mean, he's not going to sustain a 0.64 ERA, but XERA loves, I mean, hitters aren't necessarily squaring him up because you got to respect 100. And on top of that, here comes a 90 mile an hour splitter that looks like a drop ball, basically. When you look at it, I think there's still a little bit more consistent pitch making that needs to go on with Martinez, but you can see he's gone head to head against some of the best hitters in the game and has made them look very bad. Like, what, ask Mookie Betts what his last at bat last night looked like. Last at bat in that series looked like it was domination.
Yeah, I mean, the last two, I mean, we can get right into that. I think that's what we're talking about, is that Dodgers series. Like, I did not expect them to, you know, walk away with that, taking, two or three. they won impressively in those two games. I look at those as like quote unquote complete wins.
Yeah, and even their one loss, they put themselves in position to win. They just didn't get the bounce. They just getting the balls found two hard hit balls found gloves in that game with runners in scoring position. So a little bit better luck, it would have been a much different baseball game.
I mean, and they have a positive run differential, so that's they're a little worse than they were at this point last year. I mean, like I've been saying all along, it's been too small. I mean, we're a third of the way through the season. So
a little bit further than we're closing on the one third mark.
Yeah, we're just under it. So I mean, I would call this a third, or a third of the way through the season. They're a little worse than they were at this point last year, but if hopefully this is the equivalent of their bad stretch that they had in the middle of the season. That's the best you can hope. But this is the down. Like when you look at the graph of the Diamondbacks, WPA and wins and all that bullshit, this is the low point of the season. Hopefully, we've already passed it.
Yeah, we were talking about the low point of the season being the Detroit series where they got dismantled in the first two games of that series.
And then the Royals beat them up on the next day.
And then and then they play their four best games after those two really awful losses. Like their four best games of the season.
That might honestly have been the turning point in the season. I don't know, like behind the scenes information, what's going on in the locker room clubhouse, but I would imagine that there were some really tough conversations that needed to be, had at that point. And maybe that's what did it. I don't know. Sometimes it just takes time to, for the work to show up on the field. I think Corbin Carroll is a guy, like, I'm sure he's putting in the work, turning it around. It's just nice because he's just not getting results. And that's the thing that I think there's too much talent on the roster for it to, they've hung around like two games under 500 so far, even at like the worst points, they've been at worst mediocre.
I think their low point in the season was 6 under when they lost the second game to San Diego. But since that day, they're 10-6.
That's not too bad. I mean, it's
that's 600 baseball.
They're facing I don't know how good the Marlins are.
Yeah, I think the Marlins have been playing well of late. I definitely should try to check the.
Haven't paid attention to the Marlins. I mean, I don't know what the schedule looks like coming up. I think there's some like relatively weak opponents coming up in the schedule.
Yeah, Diamondbacks have to take advantage of this portion of the schedule, in my opinion, in order to really make that run. It's the thing they did last year was they kind of beat up on some weak teams early, although ironically enough, that soft part of the schedule also included the team they played in the World Series.
Yeah. that's a really ironic situation there. There's the minor leagues. I think there's hope. Too, like there are some players that I think can contribute down the stretch. Probably won't. I mean, majority of the guys that we're gonna talk about here in a moment, I know we're not gonna be contributing, but I think there are a few guys there.
Yeah, because if you look at the Marlins have been, I guess you could say they haven't been dreadful bad recently. Although weirdly enough, they can't hit left hand. They have trouble against left hand pitching. They're 1-17, according to Baseball Reference. Although, like I said, the D-backs don't have any troubles hitting left hand pitching, and they're 6-12.
That's just a random oddity.
It could be just random.
That sounds like statistical noise, but it could be that could be interesting. I don't know who is starting for the Diamondbacks in those series. Hopefully, Brandon Pfaff, one of them.
Yeah, you also have to keep in mind the Marlins are also have won 7 of their last 10.
Yeah, so a hotter Miami team.
So they looking at the 7-10, they beat Detroit and they won against Philadelphia in their last 10 games. They beat Philadelphia in extra innings on May 12th, and they took 2-3 against the Tigers and shut them out in two of those. They actually have three straight shutout wins in that stretch, too. Four that's total.
That's impressive.
So three. Yep. And then two or three against the Mets, and two or three against Milwaukee. I expect to win 95 games this year. So they're not. Yeah, they're being some decent teams.
Yeah. So I would be. I think it would be a mistake to underestimate the Marlins. They've always kind of had the talent. It's just like it's a dysfunctional organization with not the best ownership. We'll just leave it at that. The talent's always been there. The Marlins have always been capable. Like, I mean, the way that its current roster has been constructed, definitely capable of being very streaky. And they did make the wild card last year. So.
Yeah, because I'm going to say game one, Braxton Garrett has a very good track record. He's got an ER. His last two seasons, he's got a pretty solid ERA, solid number. So D-backs can't sleep on him, even though they had one game where he shut them down. Another game, they slapped them around.
That's how I would see this series anyway. It's like a point. We could go either way. See them take a 2-3. I could see the Marlins sweeping the Diamondbacks.
I mean, it could go either way. Like I said, Diamondbacks didn't. Although, when we look at what happened last year, the Diamondbacks didn't necessarily get there, but they didn't necessarily get annihilated by the Marlins. Maybe one or two games where they did that. They should have won both series last year.
Yeah.
It worked out for the D-backs because they had to play the Dodgers instead of the Phillies in the division round.
Yep.
So. Kind of.
So let's put prospects.
Yeah. So the present looks good. Let's see how the future looks for this team. So why don't we start off the bat? Drew Jones has, since a dreadful start, has turned it around, and we'll pull up the numbers. But Drew Jones is.
He's been above average. I think it was 116 WRC plus last I looked.
Yeah, he's hitting 276 with seven doubles, a triple, two homers, 782 OPS. Why don't you start off?
Well, I mean, like, so Drew Jones, I mean, obviously he's had real health issues. I mean, if he just stays healthy the whole season and is above average hitter, like that's a success to me. I think it's probably a success to the team. There is some concern there. He does strike out a bit too much for my liking or yours, but he's still walking it. I think above 10%. So, I mean, I kind of see him profiling like a Mike Cameron, maybe. I don't know how much power is going to be there. I mean, he could be Alex. I mean, he's a fantastic defensive center fielder. I mean, he does not need to hit that much. If he could maintain this production in the higher levels in the minors, that's an everyday major leaguer with that, like his current, offensive profile and defensive profile.
Yeah, because I'm looking at his game log. Since April 17th, Drew Jones is hitting 329. This is the 456 balls in play average, so this is not sustainable. He's hitting 329 with a 442 on base percentage and a 494 slug. And the number of donuts that he's taken since April 17th, I can count on one hand. And when I say a donut, I mean an O for day. One hand, I think he's got five donuts over that stretch. And this is 25 games. So like hits in 20, 25 is pretty impressive. We talk about 21 game hitting streaks. 20 and 25 is pretty good.
Yeah. That's kind of what you want to see out of him here. I mean, he's got a lot to, I mean, before he was very young, he's pretty much age appropriate for the level at this point. So it's like, he's lost a lot of developmental time. He needs to stay healthy for the whole season. Those are the two things I'd like to see the strikeout rate go down. What's that right now? What percentage?
I think Drew Jones' strikeout rate is still like 36 or 37% for the season. But since April 23rd, he's got 22 strikeouts and 90 plate appearances, which is less than 25%. We'll take that.
Okay. Yeah, I take that.
With a healthy number of walks.
I know he's like, he had like a 13% or like 12% walk rate, which is like, that's, you'll take that. It's just really the real question with him is the strikeout rate going to be ridiculous? Like he obviously has, like, he can recognize, like, his pitch recognition is pretty good if he's walking that much. I think some of the strikeout rate is just like having a really kind of aggressive approach. He's very similar to his, like, this, watching him play, he just seems like a version of his father in some respects. And he's a bit of a free swinger. But I mean, I think he's a major leaguer. I don't think he's going to go bust. I see this as a real positive. I mean, for your number, your first draft pick, number one, right? Number one draft pick?
I think he went second. Holiday went first, that's right, in the draft.
Yeah, that's right. So he went number two in the draft. And like, yeah, you obviously want to hit on that pick. It's a travesty if you don't. Let's be honest. Like, if your number, if your first draft pick in your draft, you go bust on it. It's especially with someone with that kind of blood, pedigree, and just like the like. I mean, he's very obviously a talented young player. So I mean, it's a surprise that he's had such a bad start to his career. But it looks like he's turning around. Let's move up to the next level of the minors. Going to throw out here.
All right, so a guy who's popping off recently, left-handed pitcher Spencer Gheesting. He was a over-slot 11th round pick. He actually signed for a good amount of money out of that round. $400K is not nothing. But he's there's probably a good chance he's pitching in Amarillo by his 23rd birthday in July.
Yeah, he's had a really impressive run. Like, I'm just looking through every time I look through the box score. It's that, when I've seen it, like, he's always usually had a pretty good start. I'm trying to think of like what level Andrew Pinter's at. I know he's in the lower level.
He's just complex. Same level, same team,
same level. He's a guy who needs a promotion. He has been like absolutely raking. That's a name that I think most Diamondback fans are. I mean, yeah. But so that's a guy that he kind of looks like he could use a promotion. I think he's if he's at the same level of hitting by the All-Star break, I would promote him. Probably promote him now at the end of May.
I mean, if you look at Pintar's numbers, they jump off the page compared to everyone else. He leads the team in home runs, RBI, stolen bases, and it's not even close on that one.
Yeah.
The most walks on the team by a lot, and his strikeout rate is not even close to the most.
Yeah.
Like, he leads the team in every offensive category.
Across the board.
And some of them by a long shot.
Across the board, good numbers.
Okay, I found one category he doesn't lead the team in, and that's doubles. But, I mean, he's got 7 homers. The next best guy has 4.
How many triples does he have?
He leads the team with 2, but it's a 4-way tie.
Yeah. So, okay. I mean, that's the guy that I'd heard the name, and his numbers jump off the page. Like, I mean, he's leaps and bounds better than his teammates defensively. So
he's finally healthy is the thing.
Yeah. It's another guy. Like, I mean, it's, it's really easy to write up a prospect when, they don't have the health, because you never know. Like, a guy can be done. A guy can be done, and that's it. And sometimes they just don't have makeup. They don't have the injury's bad enough, or there's complications from whatever like surgery they have, or complications of the rehab. You never fucking know until they show up and they do it. And each year you're just gonna duck a little bit. But Pinter looks like what he when he first entered into the Diamondbacks. Was he an international?
Looked more like the guy that was almost a. Well, I mean, Pintar entered his junior season with probably day one draft pick expectations, but unfortunately he got injured that year, fell to the Diamondbacks in the 5th round. They signed for slot.
Okay, so he's going to be the 5th rounder.
And then he missed a good chunk of last season. In fact, he's actually played more.
He's almost
played. Again?
Is he?
I hope not.
That'd be news to me. He wasn't on the IL last to check. That's hopefully he's not injured. But if he is, hopefully continue hitting like this, because
he's on the roster.
Yeah, that's what I thought. I think there's a name.
Games.
He's played more games this season than he has the rest of his career.
Well, he's at or I think all he played 58 or just, last year,
or just under, I think actually.
58 last year's, he's going to play game number 39 Thursday night against, I don't remember, but Yeah, his numbers jump off the page offensively compared to everyone else. And I think Ian Gasing should probably be in Amarillo by the end of June. Like, Gasing's putting up a 0.732 whip.
Yeah, I would expect both of them actually to be promoted pretty soon. Let's get that Amarillo. I think there's a name that there's two names that should be talked about. We can go we'll go positive first. Davison De Los Santos is
Yeah, he's already in Reno. That's all you need to know. Wow.
Boy, are we glad that he came back to the Diamondbacks organization, because I think that there's some real talent there. He definitely has hit the cover off the ball. Like, he's always really hard hit balls.
I wonder if also moving the first base is helping his offense, because now he doesn't.
Oh yeah.
Like, I don't. He's got poor defensive instincts, in my opinion, but I do think there's something to be had with that swing. Like, obviously, De Los Santos lapping the team in.
Like, turned 21.
He's not even 21 yet. He doesn't turn 21 until next month. He's not even old enough to drink.
That's right. So he's 20. This is a child, okay? And he's a children amongst men, or a man. He's super young. No disrespect. It's just like a 20-year-old in, or just under 21-year-old in AAA is very impressive. I think that's the thing, is that his I think not having to worry about like defense over like playing third clearly wasn't the third baseman.
Some
people are suited to, you know, roles better than others.
I always thought it's like watching De Los Santos in the fall. Like, I thought he was a better first baseman than a third baseman.
It's very much one of those kind of like, it's a very obvious kind of candidate to be shifted over to first. Like, there's just players that you can tell. I don't know like how to really explain it, but you can just look at a guy at a position and you're like, he is not that position. He needs to play somewhere else. And the only time I've seen him play third, I was like, he is not a third baseman.
Yeah, the same can also be true on the flip side. They're playing a position they're supposed to be playing. It's like, aha, this is where he should play.
Yeah.
Well, I haven't seen much of him at first base. And like I said, the fall league is not necessarily high sample size, but if I can get a look at him, it's like, get a look at him in spring training, maybe next year. See if he looks more natural. The same is true for Gino Groover. He looks more natural at first base, although that'll be a fun controversy to have, Gino Groover versus Davison De Los Santos, although there is no wrong answer with those two.
There's a lot of similarities in the two players. Just like in terms of like, they both just hit the shit out of the ball. Like, they are two of like, if I had to say like, pick two players with ball the hardest in the Diamondbacks minor league system, and probably the minors in general, those are the two. Like, they really, really hit the ball hard.
Yeah, I'm curious.
Like, I cannot overstate how hard Groover hits the ball, or how hard De Los Santos hits the ball. Groover fractured.
Yeah, Groover's out till July.
Yeah, I know. Jordan Lawler.
His pitcher killed him.
We're talking about injuries. Jordan Lawler, I know he just started a hand strengthening program, so he's it was like on the 5th. He had his on May 5th. So he's well into his hand strengthening program. So I think he's getting relatively close to getting back into a game. I can't really say, but just the fact that his 5-week follow up went well. Last I checked, he was getting the strengthening conditioning program as part of his rehab. I would think that he's probably a couple weeks away from like actually appearing in a game. But
couple weeks from resuming baseball activities, not let alone appearing in a game.
I would think that he's in a game by the end of June.
He's in Reno by the end of June.
That's kind of what I'm saying. So he's a guy that I would love to be able to talk about and be here's prospects.
As good as seasons Perdomo had last year, and as hot as Kevin Newman has been the last two and a half weeks, Jordan Lawler is a better shortstop than them when he's has the potential to be a much better shortstop than both of them when healthy.
Yeah,
of course, hasn't happened yet, but
it's just one of those things. I mean, we've learned that Blaze Alexander, all of us were wondering why he wasn't called up, is Jordan's a much better, I honestly think he's a much better defensive shortstop than Blaze Alexander. I think with experience, he can greatly exceed Kevin Newman. I think Kevin Newman probably just has enough reps that he probably is a better. If you both threw him into a game right now, okay, and I mean, the game is on the line, we're in the playoffs, and you need make sure it's good defensive inning, no errors, and you're good. Yeah, I would put Newman in over Lawler. But long term, I think he's a much better defensive shortstop.
I would compare Jordan Lawler's defense to what the Dynamax are getting out of Kevin Newman right now. Not necessarily going to make super rangy plays, but he will make the plays on the balls he gets to. 99% of the time, if he gets to it, it's an out. Lawler's never going to win a gold glove. He may never be a gold glove finalist, but he's an above average defender, and he will make the plays he's supposed to.
He's got fantastic instincts on the field defensively. Plus, he's got great body control. That too. He contorts himself. He looks bad. That's the problem. While being a very good shortstop.
I've seen him bend 90 degrees.
I think he's a better shortstop than you probably think he is, than most people think he is, just because he doesn't pass the eye test necessarily. No, he's passed the
eye test for me.
I've gotten to know him enough that I see he does. But if you just take a just chunk of an average Jordan Lawler interaction on a difficult play, okay, he'll make it look way more difficult. Like the contortions that he does to get the ball to first, okay, are like, what are you doing, bro? But he makes it work, and he has great body control, like you're saying. But it's the way he goes about it. Sometimes he just doesn't pass the eye. It's nothing.
Just go watch his first major league chance. He had to field a hard hit ball that took a nasty hop on him, and he just backhands it like a pro.
And then gets
a throw off easily.
The young Jeter comparisons actually really aren't like he's a better. He's a better.
Lawler's gonna be a better defender than Jeter.
Yeah, he's a better. As I was gonna say, in terms of just their profile as shortstops, and like he's been compared to Derek Jeter his like whole life basically.
They got similar body types. Jeter a little bit taller, but.
That was the top going in the draft actually that they heard was Derek Jeter but with better defense, or like if Derek Jeter lived up to his defensive reputation, which is a terrible backhanded compliment about Derek Jeter.
What do they say? Derek Jeter may be the worst defensive shortstop of all time, but to be good enough to last long enough to get that honor is pretty funny and pretty good too. Like Derek Jeter is probably the best offensive shortstop in the history of the game because of that.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, as much as I dislike Derek Jeter, like I greatly dislike Derek Jeter. I could spend this like a next hour just talking about how much I just greatly dislike the man. Okay. Just for a multitude of reasons. Some personal, some of them just, as a he's always rubbed me the wrong way.
Who has that?
The thing is, I never got is like his Mr. Friendly with media, and it's turned out that like he's really not that, like he hasn't been very friendly since he retired. Like his personality has come across as what are you doing, Derek? Like you didn't have to do all that much to like maintain all the goodwill. No, let's go be a terrible owner for the Marlins and erase all the goodwill. Well,
he was
the owner.
He was the team president.
Well, I mean, team president, I think he had like a minority stake in it. That's how he came in position. He had a minority stake as part of the investor group. Digressing, I would totally take Derek Jeter's career for Jordan Lawler. Like, hell yeah, he's a Hall of Famer. One of the best offensive shortstops of all time. Like, yeah, you take him any day of the week.
Jeter should have been a third baseman, but.
But yeah, I mean that's the thing.
He would have been a good defensive third baseman. The Yankees were.
Yeah.
They were smart. Brian Cashman told Jeter to his face he sucks as a defender.
That's hilarious. Absolutely. Hilarious. That's hilarious. Yeah. No. I mean, I think to some extent, Jordan Lawler like subconsciously modeling his game after Derek Jeter is where some of those contortions come from. That's actually where I was going with the Derek Jeter comp, is that I think some of that's just like just from like him being his kind of role model growing up.
Yeah, and like modeling Jeter's his game, poor defense modeling his game after him. Due to lack of range, when Jeter made some really good plays in his career too. Don't forget that.
Yeah, here's the thing. Jeter passed the eye test for a lot of scouts, and the advanced metrics are all like, what kind of cracker are you all smoking? Because he's not good at all. And it comes down to the range. And the thing is Jeter's ability to like contort himself to make a play made him look like he's this amazing shortstop. And like I said, Lawler does that while having a fantastic amount of range. He's like super fast. We underrate his reflexes and his speed because he just makes it look easy. And I think that's I'm really excited to see him back on the field. I think I'd be very surprised if he's not with the team by like September. August. Yeah, September. I mean, that would be it'd be very surprising. He's not back on the roster in September. Oddly enough, would that make him rookie eligible still?
I mean, if he doesn't play 40, if he's not on the roster for 45 days or something like that this year, he would still technically be eligible. It's either 45 days on the active roster, 130 at bats.
No, he's definitely under that.
No, not career, season.
They'd have to call him up in like mid-September for him to retain rookie eligibility for 2025, which would be very strange.
Corbin Carroll had 115 at-bats called the last week of August or something like that. 150, yeah. 130 plate appearances. It's at-bats, not plate appearances, though.
Yeah.
I do think if Lawler were still rookie eligible in 2025, I think it's a coin flip if he wins the award. Because it's a much weaker 2025 rookie class. There's no sure... I don't think there's a surefire thing. Maybe we should talk about that at some future date.
Yeah, I don't think there is.
The offseason.
They're also, I mean, this is one of those things is that like just prospects that are, you know, like where they stand in terms of like where they're going to make the, you know, if they're going to make the roster or not that year, when they'll make the roster, how those prospects are ranked, like a lot can go, you know, can change things. Like the prospect, like our top 100 prospect list right now can be very different than it will be in like, you know, 4 months.
Well, I'll just say this. If Jordan Lawler is still a prospect after this season, I don't necessarily think that's a good thing.
He failed to establish himself
as a starting shortstop. Like Perdomo is literally the bar for a starting shortstop in this league, in my opinion. Pretty much the bar.
Yeah, I think that's like probably, I think we need to talk about a pitcher. I think that's the only thing
Yeah, we can talk about Christian Mina. I think he's got enough of a sample size with Reno that we can talk about the possibility of him being in the rotation now because he's got 10 starts. The results are pretty good. Of course, it's a little bit inflated. The ERA is a little bit inflated. When I say inflated, I mean he's overperforming.
He's gone at least 5 innings in all of his starts. He's eating innings.
No, he's had a couple 4-inning starts.
Okay, but I mean, still, he's been an innings eater. 5 innings. His ERA is impressive for Reno and the PCL. Like, if you've got an ERA under 4 pitching for Reno, you can probably hang with major leaguers. Like, that's a real accomplishment. So, I mean, like, what he's doing is like kind of like what we wanted to see out of him. I think he's progressed somewhat as a prospect too, and just in the last few months. Like, the velocity, I haven't looked at it. This is right now at the point of the season where I think like it should be back to where it was in spring training. Now it's like, you know, kind of warm out.
We can blame the weather. Yeah, we can blame the weather. And the nice thing about having minor league Statcast information is we can look this up.
I throw that out there earlier. I'm like, maybe it's the weather. And that's when people like to get about it. But like, it is very hard to warm up when it is cold as shit out. And it was snowing at the beginning of the season.
I think I was the only one. I didn't poo-poo that theory.
Yeah, but people think it's crazy to throw out like maybe the weather, and it's an actual like I've just heard it enough where people bitch about warming up in an extra cold environment, and like that's how I
keep in mind food. It's what 60 to 70 degrees in February in Arizona.
It's hard to warm up in like 50 degree weather, let alone when it's
Reno's
like 30
been 50 degrees
out.
All season.
Yeah, it's been cold as fuck all season. It's been very cold all season.
All right. So I'm pulling up game by game with Mena, and if we go by date, and I'm going to sort by this. So his velocity, his last start was up to a season high 94 on his four seam fastball.
Okay.
Now, of course, we know Mena's bread and butter is going to be that curveball and slider. He's a guy that's going to dominate with breaking stuff, which will be even better when it actually breaks at a normal altitude.
I think he'll do much better once he actually is able to pitch in like a normal pitching environment. I think we're more likely to see Blake Walson. I know there's a start that was questionable about who would be in the
I would be shocked if Blake Walson isn't pitching Sunday for the Diamondbacks. I don't know if he's going to start the game or not. I could see them going with Justin Martinez to, quote, start the game, and he gets like six outs, and then they go turn the ball over to Walson or something like that. Because Martinez, when he's on, is matchup proof.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you throw 100 mile per hour gas, it's like a challenge.
And it's like
for
his third best pitch.
Like, I mean, when you see Mookie Betts struggling against your heat, it's going to play against pretty much everyone.
Mookie Betts, Adley Rushford, and Ryan Mountcastle. Insert random all-star here.
Yeah, exactly.
When Martinez is locked in, nobody can hit him.
When do you think we would see Mena if we see him at all this season?
See who?
Christian Mena.
Oh, I think we'll see him after the trade deadline. If the Diamondbacks have a bad month of June, it'll be more. You're gonna see them probably trade Jordan Montgomery. That would open up a rotation spot for him. Because in my opinion, Mena is the three Reno stars. I think now Ciccone's there, but
I wouldn't start his clock yet. That's pretty much my real concern. I mean, necessarily that he's ready.
Mina's not gonna run a rookie of the year thing, so why worry about the clock?
It's service time.
Service time. I mean.
Years of
maybe
control.
If you don't think he's going to make the 2025 rotation, that might be a valid argument.
Yeah, he might not. That's the thing. I mean, next month is going to be the real make or break for the Diamondbacks. They need to play above 600 for basically a month.
Yeah, if they can play 600 to the end of June, that's enough games for them to basically allow them to coast into the playoffs by playing 500.
Yeah. I think my expectations were got a little, raised too much going into this season. This is
raised too much, lowered too much.
Yeah, I think
locking it.
Yeah, I think lowering the expectations of what's going to happen for the rest of the season is real. Probably like a better move to make. And if they have a bad month coming up, like that's pretty much it. I would expect, some of the shorter term of players that they've lost control of, they're going to be moved. Montgomery, like you said.
Merrill Kelly's not tradable right now, and it's more likely he's going to get his option declined because of the injury.
Yeah.
But I could see it going either way. Because Merrill Kelly could still get $7 million on the free agent market if teams feel like he's healthy.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, he's healthy. I think most teams would take Merrill.
If he's fully healthy at the end of the season, I don't think he's going anywhere.
Oh, yeah. No, I think the Diamondbacks would pick up his option. There's no questions about his health. It's a no-brainer, especially if he's still an effective pitcher.
Yeah, I mean, this is the first time he's had a major injury. Lasting injury that could have any lasting potential.
So anything like you want to final thoughts before we wrap this up?
Yeah, I was going to say I think right now, this is the season defining stretch of this team. The longer this good streak goes on, the better their playoff chances are. Like I said, 10-6, that's .625 winning percentage. So if they can keep that going for as long as they can, they can keep that going through the All-Star break. I think we're going to see Mike Hazen swing some trades.
It'll be interesting.
Get their three starter. Brandon Pfaadt, obviously, is now your two starter. Which, I mean, he's pitched like a two. Let's be here. I know the four ERA starts with a four, but he's pitched like a two.
No worse than five innings. He has lived up to his expectations as a prospect.
He's actually outpitched my expectations.
he's lived up to mine. I was, as soon as he shut down the PCL and the Texas League, I was like, this guy is going places. And then he showed up in the playoffs. Okay, like that just shows that he has the cojones to really stick the landing, and he really has stuck the landing in terms of being a major leaguer. So
keep in mind, he has a shorter rope in the postseason than he does now, but even with the longer rope, he's making it work.
Yeah. I mean, it's
like five quality starts in a row is nothing to sneeze at, even though it's close to the franchise record, but it's,
I call him at least a three starter, maybe a two. But you know, I mean, that's hopefully they're not in a position where they're trading away half the roster. I do enjoy that for the chaos. Like I really enjoy fire sales. Like anytime I'm ever asked of like what the team should do, 9 times out of 10, I'm going to say, well, they should trade away everyone. And Michael can attest to this because I've done it less recently, but in the past, it's usually been like trade away everyone. They should trade away Walker. They should trade away Marte. They should trade away Gallon. They should trade away Kelly. And I do that because I just enjoy the chaos and I feed off of it. So there is a part of me that would really love for them to be awful just so I can just watch the Diamondbacks fans on the internet flip out. But
I see too much of that already.
Yeah, I know. That's the thing. The only reason why I'm not actively rooting for it. So hopefully they're not in a position where they're, you know, have to blow up the team. And it's more, you know, make some deadline acquisition than giving away parts to the Yankees and, you know, the other, you know, big league clubs.
Yeah, leave the fire selling to the White Sox, Rockies, and
the
Astros.
Even have to sell. They have like a guy. That's not
their
one
long-term
thing.
Guys are actually worth keeping, believe it or not. I guess Gomber, but Gomber is actually pitching well of late.
Yeah, at least we're not Rockies fans, you know.
I wish the D-backs played in Colorado.
Yeah, it's no Coors Field. Unfortunately, that's a whole conversation. Yeah, they actually could win there.
They have won there.
I think the real thing, like, you know, with a team, like, besides the fact that the Rockies don't, like, absolutely got, I don't know. I think that's a whole debate that we'll have to save for another time. It's like, is it possible for a Rockies team to actually be successful long term?
Well, I mean, they're being successful short term of late. Well, the A's kicked their butts, and the A's put an extra clinic on in the last couple of days.
Like, oh, the A's, okay? The A's have the cheapest ownership possible, okay? And they will, like, fall ass backwards into a division occasion. The Rockies, in all their existence, they have never won the division. They've only made it in the playoffs through a wild card. That's it.
Yep. And they lucked their way into a World Series. No, 7.
The thing is they've had no sustainable success, and even a team like the A's, where they like they trade away half, or you know, like we know the A's, okay, or the Royals. The Royals, you know, like they've, you know, they've actually are capable of winning their division, developing, you know, a farm system, and you know, like having players come up. And the Rockies, it's just like, I mean, we all understand the limitations of Coors Field in terms of like an offensive environment, but it's you would think they would have like lucked their way into like another wild card. I mean, like look at the Marlins.
Didn't they do that like not too long ago? Well, I thought the Rockies with Arenado and Story were better than the mid-2000s Rockies, although they did have Matt Halliday and slightly post-prime Todd Helton.
Yeah, I mean, really, I said they haven't really capitalized on you know, a lot of the prospects that they actually have developed.
The prospects they have in their system are actually pretty good. Like they've got a really good the Rockies have a very good farm system. Like don't sleep on that. They might luck into some success with it.
I think with Dick Monfort is the owner of the Rockies. I don't think he's like I mean, they didn't make any offseason moves whatsoever.
There wasn't anything to be made, really.
There's nothing to be made, but that's not been unusual for the Rockies. And when they have made moves, it's been disastrous. So I think a lot of it is like until they have a different ownership, I don't know if the Rockies are ever going to be, you know, like, they might win the division here, and, you know, if it's talent all, they look into it. Yeah, certainly it's possible.
I don't know.
Will they sustain it? I don't think they can.
Considering how tough it is to play in Colorado, I think the Rockies should probably focus on player development as their core building block.
Young guys. They unfortunately are
free agents aren't going to age well there.
Their farm system locations are in some of the, like, just as tough environments as the Diamondbacks, if not more so. I mean, they don't. I think Albuquerque is their double A.
Yeah, affiliate. But it makes sense for them to have a triple A affiliate that's at similar elevation.
Yeah, they should. I mean, as they should, but, like, they're just the way their farm system
double
is
A,
set
they're
up,
playing close to sea level.
Yeah.
I don't remember what their high A team is. A pretty low elevation team too. It's Northwest League. It's a pitcher friendly league.
The California League is,
and then Fresno's basically the same.
Yeah,
the California League. I mean, Fresno plays the same as Visalia.
Yeah, they're really next to each other. Oddly enough, the most hitter friendly environment is actually, like, it's Lancaster or.
I don't think anyone plays there anymore.
Yeah, no. Like, I was gonna say, I don't think they play anymore. I think who's there now? But, like,
Stockton,
it might
think
be
is known.
Inland Empire. And it's
windy. That's basically Las Vegas, except
it's windy. That's the real the bit. It's hot and it's windy. Ball fly the park. That's pretty much the whole league though. In the summer, it's been getting very hot in California in summer, as we all know.
And also, 400 batting average on balls in play is not really unheard of at that low a level either. We talk about
exactly. I don't know exactly what they could do to make their. You know, to have sustained success. And until they do it, I'm not gonna believe in it. That's the thing with the Rockies.
You could also say the same for the Diamondbacks, but I feel like there's a way they can do it.
They have a little bit of a better track record.
Problem is they're not consistent at it. Like, it's like every other year they need to spit out a Brandon Pfaadt every other year. With pitching.
This is the longest the Diamondbacks have had the same GM, I think, at this point.
Think about it this way. The Diamondbacks have only had two seasons out of, what, eight years under Hazen, where they've had they've had one season of more than 90 wins, only one season of more than 90 losses.
That's not that bad.
And more winning seasons than losing seasons.
Yeah, exactly. I would say how the Diamondbacks, you know, front offices has been, like, I mean, they've actually been given a chance, first of all, but, like,
actually no equal numbers.
Is this the, I think this is now, like, they're tied, or it's, like, currently the longest they've been under a GM.
Oh, it's definitely the longest. I think Joe Jr. was, although I don't remember when Joe Jr. was hired, but it's pretty close.
He was fired.
Joe Jr. was obviously hired before they played a game.
Joe Jr.
might be a little bit. Well, Hazen's going to pass Joe Jr.
Yeah. I mean, Joe Jr. The reason why I say that, like, I don't count, like, the, you know, 98 years is just because it's like,
well, if you don't count before 98, then it's definitely Hazen.
Yes, Hazen. I mean, okay, so if you count him from 96 on, he's got a couple more years left, but
I thought Jones hired 95, but
I think he might have been actually, it was 95. He was hired basically, I think, almost immediately.
Yeah,
he was one of the first hires. So Joe Jr. couldn't develop. He didn't really have a farm system, and that's definitely been much more a strength for.
Well, they drafted well when Rizzo was the scouting director.
To Joe Jr.'s credit, he made the best free agent signing of all time.
Well, I mean, when you get a Randy Johnson, you got to do it.
That's what I'm saying. I mean, unfortunately, Hazen hasn't hit on a Randy Johnson. Hopefully, he will.
Mike Hazen's MO isn't necessarily that type of contract.
No, I'm saying, like, that's the difference between Joe Jr. and Mike Hazen. They both have gone to a World Series. Okay.
Yep.
I think they've gotten a wild card. Both got World Series and wild cards.
No, the D-backs didn't get a wild card until Hazen took over. All their previous postseason trips were in the division.
Have they won the division at all in the last?
Not under Hazen. But that's not their fault.
Yeah, it's not their fault. Yeah,
it's the Dodgers' fault.
But, like, I mean, I basically compare, like, in terms of, like, the highs of their, you know, their careers so far, or at least for Hazen so far. If he had Randy Johnson in this most recent World Series, it'd be a Curt Schilling. Like, I mean, that's really the difference maker. It was just those two signings. And of course, wow. Gonzo just coming out, like, having a monster, one of the monster off seasons of all time, or, you know, seasons of all time.
Yeah, there's Randy Johnson or Curt Schilling in Major League Baseball anymore.
Oh, yeah, that doesn't, yeah, there's no Randy.
No, I mean, any team, not just the Diamondbacks. That such a pitcher no longer exists.
Yeah, it's not a thing anymore. So, I mean, I think, I'm still optimistic as we wrap this up, is, you know, but I think really, like, the next month is critical. We're just going to, you know, see what happens.
So, yeah. Yeah, let's take a look at the schedule. So,
the draft, see,
three against the Marlins, that's a must-win series. Sweep if you can.
Yeah.
Diamondbacks have good pitching for this series. And then after that, you go off day two in Texas, split that, and you got four in New York. If they go 3-3 on the road trip, it's not a big deal. It's hard to win on the road. Then you got San Francisco at home. You got to win that one.
Yeah, absolutely. Got to win
that one. You got to win that one. San Diego, split that. You're in good shape, like I said. And then you got to win the home stand between the Angels and the White Sox. Like, those two teams are headed for last place.
Those are teams you got to beat up. I think that's really going to be the, if they can walk away. Are those three game series or four game series with the NLS?
The Angels and the White Sox are three gamers, and then another off. The off days are pretty good for in June. And then you got Washington on the road, and don't sleep on Washington. They're not a good team, but they're not a bad team.
Yeah,
they got some talent, but their best years are ahead of them.
Yeah, they're in that weird kind of period, that awkward teenage year before they're actually like a good team.
And very Philadelphia's going to be hard.
It's going to be a challenge.
That team's going to be. I mean, that team is probably pissed over the NLCS. So Diamondbacks are going to be ready for a Hornet. But of course, the D-backs did a pretty good job of navigating Dodger Stadium after the NLDS. So
I think the Padres series is probably going to be the toughest one on this road Padres series, actually.
The D-backs somehow beat the Padres. That's when I
they're better than they were last. They're better than they were last year. The Padres are actually, like, the luck is going that way. I mean, but Xander Bogaerts, their worst player, is just kind of removed himself from the team, so they get better by default. So I mean, I think the Padres are going to be tough. The Giants are always tough at home.
Well, the Giants are a home game for the D-backs.
Oh, okay. So, yeah, no. You got to beat the Giants at home. You know, but that's really, I think if they're, you really want to see them above 500 by that point.
Yeah, I agree. You definitely want to see the Diamondbacks at the end of June standing at least two games over 500, in my opinion. So if we do the math, let's do the math here. They win 2-3 against the Marlins. That puts them at 26 and 27, split against the Rangers and Mets. So that is 29 and 30. Wins against San Francisco, 32 and 32. Actually, let's just do the math. If I do the math and it works out, you split all the road games, you win three out of four series at home. You're looking at probably three games over 500. If someone wants to do the math, go ahead and do that.
I will take that. Yeah, please leave a comment. Tell us what the math would be if the Diamondbacks do what Michael just said. And leave a comment, like and subscribe. We really appreciate you share your stuff on social media, so please do that. Thank you for watching and listening.
And take care, everybody.